The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, the hottest new comic heroes, old heroes in new places, and the miracles of Miracle Monday. It's like Clordney, only with fewer pistachios and no motorcycle boots. Plus, we learn the secrets of Dim Mac from the deadliest man alive, and maybe order bagels from Schlegel's on West 105th. And is it too early for flapjacks? The days of old Krypton are behind us, but Nil Desperandum, faithful spoiler rights ahead of us, lies the Promise Podcast, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Good Miracle Monday to you all. The Major Spoilers Podcast number 1026. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. We will be talking about the Elliot S. Magan Miracle Monday later in the show. But we got a lot of other things to get to this week, including a little bit of news.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Have you heard the news?
I wrote
the
news.
Did you hear this news? Oh, all right. Well, since the debut of Spider-Boy in Spider-Man number 7, everybody has been talking about Spider-Boy, including me right now. So as more readers are picking up the series from Dan Slott with art by Luciano Vecchio, Dan and Luciano working together, these creators plan to share more on the return, quote unquote, of the character in Spider-Man number 11 and upcoming Edge of Spider-Verse number 3. So the question becomes, has everyone simply forgotten about the Spider-Boy? Or is Slott pulling the wool over everybody's eyes again in a very spectacular way? Regardless, Spider-Man number 11 arrives in August. Edge of Spider-Verse number 3 will be arriving in September of this year with Spider-Boy.
There you go. Conan the Barbarian is also back, but not at Marvel Comics. At the end of its run, Conan is headed to Titan Comics right now. And if you missed the free comic book day edition, there was a free zero issue that you could have picked up. But considering you don't need to know every little thing about the Hyborian Age hero, you can get your first issue of Conan the Barbarian when it hits stands on July 26th, 2023. Jim Zub is writing it with Roberto De La Torre on art. And we've got a sneak peek at that over at MajorSpoilers.com. Not a lot of news this week, Matthew. It's relatively quiet, certainly with the writer's strike still going on. We talked a little bit about that in the pre-show, as well as talking about the Fablemans. You can go and listen to that when you become a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And we hope to see you over there. Let's do some reviews. Man, that's a short time. We're going to burn through this week's show, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be done in like 15 minutes.
15 minutes flat.
Let's do some reviews, and let's take a look at last week's Count Dante number 1 from Scout Comics.
Oh, my God, you guys. So as someone from the 1980s, I grew up in the 1970s. This is how time works. But I remember in the back of my magazines, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu and the like, learn the secrets of Dim Mac, the death touch from the deadliest man who ever lived, Count Dante. Now, Count Dante is apparently an actual person. And this is the, quote, unauthorized but sort of true story of the real Count Dante. So the thing that you need to know about the real Count Dante is that his name is actually Timothy. And he came back from actually fighting in the conflict in Vietnam. This issue, Count Dante number 1, is written by J.C. Barber, arts by Wes Watson. And it's an interesting take because you have to kind of balance the reality of the situation with everybody's expectation. So I love the fact that this book starts in a manner that looks like an old Marvel book from the Bronze Age, from the point where you would find the ad for Count Dante and teaching you the secrets of the death touch in the back of the issue. But it actually is an interview with Sidney Brown, who was Count Dante's assistant. Now, I'm not 100% sure whether any of this is actually semi-true. But I do know that it makes an interesting story. And this issue really focuses on the moments that take you from being a kid from, you know, the big city who may be on the wrong side of the streets or not, and kind of becoming this minor, almost kind of the 70s version of an internet celebrity, you know, like maybe a Kardashian or one of those guys like, what's his face, Logan Paul, who was a guy on YouTube who then all of a sudden was like, yeah, I'm going to go and have professional MMA fights. This is really what Count Dante was. He was the equivalent of that character who became famous for reasons that are not 100% clear. And so I enjoy the realistic aspects of the story. I enjoy when they tell us, you know, this is what happened. This is how Sydney and Tim started hanging out together. And these are the things that shaped them to make the decision to say, hey, we're going to create this thing, you know, because it's the martial arts craze. You guys weren't around in 1973, probably, but in 1973, Enter the Dragon was the pinnacle of pop culture. Everybody was into Bruce Lee. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those cats were fast as lightning. It was, in fact, a little bit frightening.
Yeah. So is this, is this a one-shot or is this a series?
This is issue one of six. So it is a mini.
Okay.
And this chapter actually ends with the first appearance of Count Dante.
Yeah.
After an important haircut and a cape.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. And it really is the kind of thing that I wish I had more background on where this story is coming from.
Oh,
because the fun of it for me.
Wait, go and read the Wikipedia page for this guy, because, you know, I'm going to bet issue five is probably going to cover the Dojo Wars and then the corruption that came after that before he died in 75. So spoiler alert, he dies in 75.
He dies in 75.
But the Dojo War is fascinating. That's why I didn't know if this was like a one-shot thing or if this was a
This is the beginning of the story, and I think this is the rise and fall. But for me, I'm old, and the best way to remind me of things is to remind me of things I already knew. So it has, you know, it has a fake ad for Sea Monkeys. It has a point where you get the old comic book page where it's like, hey, X-ray goggles. It does not have an atomic submarine yet, but there's five more issues coming. Really, it does feel like a Bronze Age comic that you'd pick up from Marvel or Charlton or Gold Key, with the exception of the coloring, which is very muted. You know, I don't know how to describe it. When people, you know, the I believe it's a TV Tropes page, reality is brown. When people want to show you that something is a realistic story, they really dial down all of the saturation,
which is, which is interesting, because that's, if I remember correctly, that's the exact opposite of how we remember things. Is that our memory actually is more saturated than it really was.
Yeah. And this has a very muted color palette, which I honestly feel almost works for some of the sequences that are taking place, you know, in the jungles of Vietnam. But then they come home, you know, and all of a sudden we're in Chicago and we're dealing with whatever is going on here. And it feels like, you know, something out of a Dolomite film. It feels like a blaxploitation movie almost. And those should be saturated. I really feel like the coloring here is oddly flat and really could use some punch, because I have a particular...
Here's your punch.
Get it? I have a particularly weird thing about coloring in that I see reds very, very intensely. There are almost no reds in this issue, which is kind of a problem for me. But, you know, it does end with a parody of the Evil Knievel toy ads that I remember. You remember those? Did you have an Evil Knievel truck?
I did not. I did not get cool toys when I was a kid.
Oh, that's right. You grew up in the orphanage from Oliver Twist.
No, I didn't have, like, my friend had one of those Evil Knievel things. Which was pretty cool, but no, I didn't have any of that.
The chopper.
I had Lincoln Logs and Tinker Toys and some plastic army men and some plastic dinosaurs.
You grew up in the 50s.
I mean, according to my parents, I think they wanted it to be that way, but.
Well, that's as may be. Here's the deal. Scout Comics is, definitely a truly independent publisher.
Yes.
So this was a hard issue for me to find, but it was definitely worth the dig. And, you know, it was worth the price of admission. Sometimes when you go and you're like, hey, is this book really going to be worth $4.99? This one is. I feel like, aside from my complaints with the coloring, the art really fits the story because it has kind of dynamic posing. It has very realistic facial expressions and sometimes more hyper-realistic, over-the-top facial expressions. But it's never something where you look at them and go, man, this is just weird comic booky story. This is like the dullest issue of Superman you ever read. But it also combines in a way that I think is nice with the actual reality. It has gravity. It has these lights that come around and do things. And again, I complain about colors.
I like gravity. I like lights.
Right. But you know, there are some fight scenes in here that I'm not saying that a real guy could do, but I'm also not saying that.
I saw some video today where I don't know what the point was. I think it was supposed to be funny, but it's like this big, heavy set old guy. Oh, you've seen Steven Seagal, right? Do his like one finger takedown of somebody where it's like super slow motion and the guy's like in the most immense pain ever. It was like that, only more realistic than, sorry, Steven Seagal, but a lot more realistic. Please don't beat me up with your slow punch. Yes, I can imagine that your karate, your Dante that you see in this comic.
Your Count Juan Rafael Dante, who may or may not exist, could punch you so hard that your heart exploded. And, you know, he definitely influenced Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, no, I dig the art in this book.
Yeah, the five-finger death punch or whatever it is that Beatrice Kiddo uses to kill the guy from Kung Fu. Yeah,
yeah,
that's definitely there. But all in all, I'm going to go with four slices of meatloaf for Count Dante number one.
Yeah, it looks good.
Out Comics. Looks good.
Yeah.
Reads well. I want to read the rest of it because if for no other reason, I want to see if they can keep up the quality of the fake ads. And also, you know, if we do get to the point where, you know, they're attacking other schools pretending to be cops. So,
yeah. And killing the sensei of that place, too. I mean, a little heads up there for those of you that, weren't aware of the Dojo Wars. Go check that out.
We know all about it because this took place, you know, the year we were born.
Yes. Also because I read the Wikipedia page as you were talking. So there you go.
What?
Count
you
Dante.
You're not allowed to read Wikipedia while I'm talking. You
Count Dante from Scout Comics. All right. From Dynamite Entertainment this week is Disney Villains Maleficent number one from Sue Lee, writer-artist Sue Lee. Matthew.
Yes, sir.
This is something we used to do on our Dueling Review show. We would talk about the solicitations of the comics that were coming out.
How many
out.
Variant covers?
How many covers does Disney Villains Maleficent number one have?
Let me get an envelope and hold it to my forehead.
Okay.
May your daughter marry a Kurdish yek herder. No, wait, I'm sorry. This is Johnny Carson's envelope and he's dead. I'm going to say 12.
Higher.
14.
Higher.
You're kidding.
Yep.
17.
Higher.
You're kidding. 25.
Higher.
You're kidding. How? Okay, wait. Maleficent is the villain from Snow White, right?
No, from Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty. And Sleeping Beauty came out in 36.
Right. But you have to remember, too, that they've also had, I think, two Maleficent movies starring Tomb Raider lady.
Right.
And so those have done very well.
How many years it's been and whether it's like a 60-year anniversary. And so they have 60 alternate covers.
No, they don't have. It's a lot less than that.
60.
35.
Okay. Jumping fish hooks.
Now, granted, many of these are, you know, the virgin variant covers, you know, like printed on a higher quality stock and all of that.
Right.
But you got your
paid for like their own 40 copies.
I was looking to see if they had, because when I saw the list of all the variants, I was like, certainly these are stores getting in on the act, but it's not. I mean, there's a Jay Lee variant, a Sue Lee, or Jay Lee is the one that does the main cover. Sue Lee is cover B. Jennifer Meyer is C. Rebecca Puebla, Erica D'Urso, a blank Authentics variant, whatever that means. David Nakayama, VHS homage variant, the J. Lee black and white variant, the Sue Lee character design variant, the David Nakayama version variant, the action figure variant, the Erica D'Urso virgin variant, Rebecca Puebla virgin variant, Sue Lee virgin variant, Jennifer L. Meyer virgin variant, Jennifer L. Meyer foil virgin variant, the J. Lee foil variant virgin, the J. Scott Campbell. By the time you get down to J. Scott Campbell, you're already down to cover V.
V as in Victor or V as in boy?
V as in Victor. Then you get W, which is the Ken Hazer variant. You've got a purple blank Authentics variant, a green blank Authentics variant, the
Did
Ken Hauser.
Blank?
Yeah, blank. So it's so I guess it's just a purple cover with just the title
it's just
on
the
it.
Color purple.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the
and you can't even there. And you can't even take that color out in the rain. So yeah, there's just very different variations of all of that. The 35 colors goes all the way down to ZG as the cover, which makes you ask. With all the hype behind this, you know, nothing against Dynamite Entertainment. I am super, super glad that they were able to nab this Disney license that apparently Marvel doesn't want because they don't know what to do with it. But, you know, if you keep it at Marvel, then nobody's paying anybody for the licensing rights. But if you go out to a third party like a Dark Horse or a Boom Studios, then they're paying the IP rights to this. So you're getting a little money out of it. But you would think with all these variant covers and the fact that Maleficent is a big deal, especially if you play the Disney Villains card game, she's a big deal on that. The story needs to be really, really good as well. Meet our central character, Matthew. He dresses in a brown cloak and his name is Reynard. And he goes into the forest looking for adventure and he bumps into the queen of the Forbidden Mountain herself, Maleficent. And he's like, I'm just here for adventure. Can you help me out? You know, your magnificence. You must get your power from your staff. And she's like, no, I'm the most powerful. But she gives him a compass that will point to his heart's desire. And then she whooshes off. And then he's like, I want Maleficent's staff. And so the compass points him right to her castle where he goes in and steals the staff only for Maleficent to chase him down and take it back and say, fool, I am the great Maleficent, and turns him into an animal. But what animal? Oh, Matthew, you're going to have to read, I don't know, something that's brown and it has a code named Reynard.
Brown. Okay, so clearly he's a weasel.
No.
Yeah, Reynard is actually.
Reynard is the clever fox. But this kind these kind of animals. The animals in this, which is really weird because I don't remember this in the movie, but the animals are all kind of twisted and warped. Like instead of a fox, it's a fox with horns.
Oh, a horn.
Yeah. So it's really weird that even the other animals that are in the Twisted Forest are that way. But when he introduced himself as Reynard, I'm like, oh, he's going to get turned into a fox, which I don't mind that being done. This is. Right. I think that this is a comic that is not for, I don't want to say adult readers because that implies that it's only for young kid readers. Cause it's also not that. I have a feeling, do you remember Boom Studios had this run, the Jim Henson's Ghost Stories, and they also had the Storyteller series. Maybe they were one and the same, but it feels very much, this feels very much like a Storyteller's series, but with the Disney character in the main role. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. The art is very well done. The story, you know, plots out exactly the way that you would think that it would be plotted out. There's no real surprises. So as far as the plotting of a story goes, it's fine, right? You know, here comes, here's how this person gets turned into a fox. And his name just happens to be Reynard. He was stealing, right? The sly fox. You know, it just boom, 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 boom. It just lines everything up very, very, nicely. The art complements the story that's in there. Maleficent is on a model and all that good stuff. And I think Disney would be happy with this, especially if Disney is trying to reach new comic book readers who are fans of their Disney Villains line, the game, system specifically, because I believe they've had a Scar issue that did very well. I think they did a Gaston issue, or there's a Gaston issue coming up. And then I want to say the Queen of Hearts. I can't remember who all the main villains are in the Disney board game. I think that's where they're drawing this from. So I think they're trying to reach those people, in which case those people, like, that's some kind of, you know, pejorative. I don't mean it that way. I think they're trying to reach people who are not comic book readers, but who are fans of Disney villains and who are even bigger fans of Maleficent, in which case this should get 5 stars right from that. But for, I think, the comic book reader who is savvy on storytelling and other things, I think picking this up feels a little bit of a letdown. I was wanting more of a backstory of Maleficent. I wanted more character development from Maleficent. I didn't want Maleficent to show up, you know, 2 times in the issue and be gone because we're following this other person. I wanted her to take front and center stage, and I didn't get that. So I feel a little put out because of that. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's still a fine comic. I'm going to give it 3 slices of meatloaf out of 5. I know my review seems a little harsh, but, you know, that's from me, the comic book reader. If I was looking at this from the Disney Villains board game person who's never really picked up a comic book but loves Maleficent, and I saw this on the stands and picked it up, I would probably say that this is probably a 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf for the non-comic book reader who is discovering this for the first time. And it might be enough to want to go and seek out a second issue of this. But for me, yeah, it's fine. I'm probably not going to seek out the next book. Yeah. So there you go. Disney Villains Maleficent #1 out this week from Dynamite Entertainment. It's still hit a very fine rating. So there you go. And I say that as someone who just was going off about student grades and what constituted pass and fail, yeah. I made a ramen for dinner tonight, and I asked my youngest son, you know, what would he rate it? He goes, oh, I would give it a 7 out of 10. I was like, you know, that's a failing grade. And he's like, you're right, Dad. It is a failing grade. And then there were some other things that were said for why it was a failing grade. But no, it's an average grade. 7 out of 10 is a C, right? So that's perfectly fine. This is 3 out of 5. That's better than 2.5. So this is good. So there you go. If you want to pick up the copy of this, there's a link to the Kindle version in the show notes. You can go and grab that, and you can read it for yourself and see if I'm right. Unfortunately, I don't know. I've tried to talk with Wayne a couple of times. I don't know if he still works for Scout Comics or not. But I know at one point he was telling me that they were trying very hard to get the Scout Comics lineup into Comixology, but I could not find it on the Kindle website or on the Comixology website. Same thing. So you probably need to go to your LCS to track that one down, if your store did in fact order it. Cause that might be the other issue. Yeah. The only one I can find are the posters that are based off the variant covers for the comic. And they're like $11 a piece. The retro cartoon metal tin, anime sign poster, wall art, vintage plaque. That is the main cover for $11. But I don't think anybody wants that. I think people want the actual comic book. So
yeah,
there you go. There you
Sometimes
go.
Sometimes you do.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, Matthew, we need to give a couple of shout outs to some people who are supporting this show and all of the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. This week, we're sending our thanks to Allison Jenkins and to Benjamin Golub, both of them up their pledges this past week and allow us to keep this show going for another week. So thank you. Thank you, Allison. And thank you, Benjamin, for your continued support of Major Spoilers and everything that we do. Dear listener, we would love to give you a shout out on the show. All you need to do is join us at patreon.com/majorspoilers. If I said that too fast, let me slow it down for you. Patreon.com, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Doesn't matter if you're capitalizing things or lowercasing it. Patreon.com/majorspoilers will take you there. You will see all of the perks that you get when you sign up. Some people, here's one thing I should point out, Matthew, because this was a comment that I saw somebody posted on the Patreon page the other day. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, I wanted the Critical Hit episodes without commercials, but I'm still getting commercials in my Critical Hit episodes. My guess is you're not using the exclusive RSS feed that you get when you become a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. That's one of the cool things about podcasters who are on Patreon. Many of us have an exclusive feed. It's part of your membership. You should get a link to it somewhere in your account settings when you sign up, that you simply just copy that RSS feed and create a new, add it to your podcast player of choice, whatever that is. And then when we release new GM roundtables, the pre-show to the Major Spoilers podcast, the GM roundtable, Octoon Cthulhu edition, bonus tracks, anything like that, it appears in a totally separate, it's almost like you have a private show just for you. And so it's really cool when you do that. So if you are a patron and you haven't accessed the exclusive RSS feed, you need to do that. There's instructions there on Patreon on how to do that. Also, if you are a patron and you haven't joined our Discord server, again, a link in the show notes. If you're not a patron, you can join the Discord server for free. But if you are a patron, I believe starting at the silver level and higher, you get access to secret channels on the Discord server. There are secret Discord channels specifically for our shows. There are for the VIP live chat. There's a special channel for that. What else do we have? Podcast pro tips and some other things that are only accessible when you become a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We're moving into the summer, and with Hollywood on strike, or at least the Writers Guild still on strike, we're here working for you and bringing you fun entertainment week after week. And isn't that worth $5 a month or $10 a month? Or new t-shirts are coming out soon. Sign up for that $25 a month level and get your name mentioned in the Critical Hit podcast. And get a shout out right here on this show. It's so easy. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. The third Monday in May, Matthew, is a day for celebration in the future where everyone addresses each other as good Miracle Monday to you. Good Miracle Monday, friend. Good Miracle Monday. But for the people of the future, why is it called Miracle Monday? And so we get introduced. Yeah, they have no idea. So we get introduced to a historian who travels back in time to the year 1982 or 81 or whatever it is, shortly after the Superman movie came out, where she sees.
So this is 1982.
Yeah. Where she gets to see the creation. Well, she doesn't quite get to see the creation of Miracle Monday, but she does get to see Superman fight the devil.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Not figuratively. Literally.
The devil. Literally.
So Kristen Wells is this character's name, which is interesting because when the Flash television series started up, oh, so many years ago, Harrison Wells was a character in that show. And a lot of people were like, well, Harrison Wells is not named anywhere else in the DCU. Maybe it's a reference to Kristen Wells, who's also a time traveler, just like H.G. Wells is a time traveler, blah, 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 blah. We find out that, yes, he's a time traveler, but not the good kind of time traveler.
Also worth noting, Kristen Wells is the name of the person who shot JR.
Oh, there you go. I thought that was all a dream. Oh, no, that was Bobby.
No. You're thinking of a different season.
Yeah, that's Bobby. So here's the thing. If you go and pick up Miracle Monday, it is back in print and has been back in print since, I want to say, 2017 or 2018. You can also go and listen to Miracle Monday as read by Elliot S. Magan over at his website, Elliot Makes Up Stuff, or Makes Stuff Up. I forget which it is. And the first thing I will say is that this book is a product of its time. So if you are into men with their shirts open and hairy chests and medallions, it's here. If you're looking for references, yes, no, well, no, not just Steve Lombard. It's everybody. That's what in the future, apparently Kristen Wells thinks that's what makes a man is a hairy chest. And so when she runs into Jimmy Olsen, she's kind of disappointed that he doesn't have a hairy chest. this has references to the Bee Gees. This has a lot of slang of the time period. It has,
it's bringing me down, man.
It has celebrity appearances, which I was really surprised. So Superman at one point, or no, it's Clark. No, it's Superman goes to the House of Magic in California, a magic castle. And he runs into Arthur C. Clarke. No, not Arthur C. Clarke.
Ray Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury. And what's his name? Max Maven, the magician, the creepy magician guy, which was like, what the what?
Yeah, there's the thing that I really love about this and what it reminds me of most. Have you ever read a novel called Super Folks? Robert Meyer put this book out in 77, and Super Folks was very much a Superman story, but it was not Superman. It was a similar character named David Brinkley. And David Brinkley is a superhero, and he's from the planet Kronk. So the only thing that can bring down David Brinkley is Kronkite.
I see.
Yeah, but it's a very colloquial, very late 70s, very almost a Tom Wolfe Bonfire of the Vanities kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
It feels almost like a Hunter S. Thompson take in some ways, but it's very much that. And I feel like there is no way in Argo City that he did not read this, that for some reason Elliot Magan did not have Super Folks in mind.
Well, I don't know. Wasn't he writing comics for DC Comics, Elliot, at the time?
Oh yeah. Elliot had been working at DC for years at that point. I want to say he started in the late 70s.
If you listen to the audiobook, he serializes it across multiple episodes of his podcast. There are moments before he gets into chapters where he's like, hey, let me tell you a little bit about how this story came about. And he talks a little bit about that, but I don't remember Super Folks being mentioned. The other thing when you read this book is it is steeped in late Silver Age, early Bronze Age nonsense.
Oh, right.
Like, there is a bit where all these nukes are. So the devil takes over Kristen Wells.
CW Saturn.
Yes. Takes over Kristen Wells. He's a lesser demon, I guess. He's just trying to bring it into the earth with the only way for Superman to get out is to kill Kristen, which is something that Superman doesn't want to do. And so at one point, the devil sets off all of the nukes in the world. And in a blink of an eye, Superman is running all across the world, shutting down these nuclear reactors, shutting down bombs. At one point, he grabs a bunch of them in his cape and wraps them up and flings them out into space, in which they explode, and the cape just stays in stationary orbit. And Superman says, I'll go back and pick that up later, kind of thing. It's that kind of crazy nonsense that we see in this book. And by nonsense, I mean that very much stretching of the imagination that you have to do with Silver Age and Bronze Age comics, where Superman's cape is indestructible and just crazy stuff there.
And it's honestly steeped in the comics lore.
Yes.
One of the key players in the early half of this is Lena, who, you know, today is only slightly less obscure because she appeared as a supporting character on Supergirl.
Yeah.
But Lena Thorell, you know, you did not hear about her in comics in the 80s and 90s. She was this weird, wacky half-sister of Lex Luthor from the 70s. And I love the attention to ridiculous detail. I love the fact that while this is definitely playing off of your Lex Luthor from TV with the French Connection. What was his name?
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, Gene
Hackman. So does everybody else. Gene Hackman, yep.
Yeah, Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor. They clearly are describing Kurt Swan's bald Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
This is that synergy that they've been looking for, because this is something that takes these comic book concepts and says, somebody made a movie about this. We're going to make a novel that appears to young adult and up, and we're going to take this novel and make it feel like a novel of 1979, 80, 81, but we're also going to just like dip it in all of the lore. We are going to soak it in, so the, this in is, the comic goodness.
So this is the first time CW Saturn has shown up, right?
Yes, to my knowledge, CW Saturn has not appeared in the comics, but
I want to say for some reason, I want to say he has, but it was like more like recent, like in the last decade
in
or
the
something
comics,
like that.
I know Superman has fought Blaze and her brother, Lord Skatanas, but I don't remember CW Saturn ever appearing in
This
looks like a job for Calamity John, to be honest.
Yeah, so I think what I'm thinking of is with Miracle Monday, because it was a book that was outside of the DC Comics continuity, there are several comic book issues, and I think one of them was a Superman annual, that reference and kind of retell the Miracle Monday story from a person in the future. I don't know if they mentioned CW Saturn in that or not.
I know that Superman 400 does have a story about Miracle Monday, wherein Superman becomes the prophet Elijah, and basically they're having a Seder where you leave a seat for Superman.
Yeah,
but that's also something that Superman 400 is sort of canonical and sort of not.
Yeah, I mean, it's that pre-crisis. Pre-crisis, anything goes kind of nonsense stuff. That's what I say, nonsense stuff.
This story definitely takes place near Earth One. Mm-hmm. It may not be physically on Earth One, but it's close enough. And, you know, Kristen Wells does appear in comics on the Earth One era, and in fact, eventually becomes the first Superwoman. Well, I shouldn't say first, but, you know, one of the millions of the first lasting Superwoman. The first Superwoman was in 1948. Lois Lane. Sorry, I had to throw that in there because somebody was going to correct me if I didn't.
I wasn't.
I know, I wasn't talking to you.
Okay. So
they're out there.
Here's
he
the thing.
She is listening this to the is, show and going, I was going to correct you, man.
This is a ridiculous, I mean, this is a ridiculous story just from top to bottom.
So
it's got
top,
time so travel. And so the gimmick is, people can travel back in time to Miracle Monday, researchers and scholars, and that's what that Kristen Wells is. And they can travel back to Miracle Monday, but they have to get funding from, you know, a research institute or something like that, because it's very expensive to go on Miracle Monday because everybody wants to see what the miracle was. Kristen decides to do it cheaper, so she goes like several weeks ahead of time and gets a part-time job in the present working for Lois Lane. And because she suddenly pops into reality, that's what throws Samuel and CW Saturn off and opens up this plot for the devil to take over Kristen's body and attempt to destroy the world, in which case Superman saves the world by not killing Kristen. There's also a Superman's identity is completely revealed kind of situation, and all of it has to be undone in the most redonkulous way, but very much a Bronze Age way of it being undone.
It is beautiful, though.
It is a fine story.
You can hear Christopher Reeve saying,
yeah, I'm not going
to
kill.
You use my pity for an innocent victim to make me abandon the principles I hold most sacred. You can hear this.
You can even hear, what's his name? Isn't it John Ford that plays his dad?
Yes.
You can hear that in the opening bits, which I really like the first chapter, right? So the first chapter is every cover of Superman is a dick, super dickery that's out there because Superman decides to start killing people. And you can kind of get an idea of where, you know, Brightburn and other stuff get it. And Superman just relishes killing people and all this stuff until Pa Kent wakes up and he is very much afraid that his son is going to turn into a monster until he goes down the hallway and his son's like, hey, Dad, look at this grasshopper and look at under the microscope and look at all these, you know, this virus that has taken over the grasshopper. And, you know, Pa is kind of freaked out because he's like, oh, my son is already starting to pull off the legs off spiders and grasshoppers. He's on his way to being a sociopath. And then Clark is like, oh, no, this grasshopper was already dead and I would never kill anything. And so, you know, it sets up that whole thing of, I would never kill anything, but that opening bit is just like super terrifying in how it's written, because it's like Superman would never do this. What's going on? Right. And so then that sets up for the end of it, which, you know, I think from that standpoint, very well written.
Yes, very much so. I do like the characterization of the Kents, and I like the terrible dialogue given to Steve Lombard. And I like the, you know, the back and forth between Kristen and Superman.
Yes.
And the best part is just the endless pop culture knowledge and cultural references that Kristen keeps having to throw out to prove to her handlers that she's absorbing, you know, the lore of 1981.
Yeah.
And at one point, you know, her handler is like, explain Thurston Howell the Third.
Right.
Okay.
Or tell us who was Henry Kissinger, and you know, that these are the things that they have to bring up.
Who was Secretary of State in 1970?
The story is just it's fascinating just as a time capsule of its time, or of a piece of its time. It's very fascinating to read. There are some things that I don't like about it. First of all, Kristen Wells travels back to the past, and then we don't see her for most of the book. Right?
She's barely a plot device.
Yeah, she's barely there as just a plot device, because mostly we're following Superman and listening to his thoughts and his actions. I'm not sure that Lex Luthor really plays a big role in this story, other than he really doesn't. I mean, you could excise all the parts about Lex Luthor in this book, and the book would still read just fine, except the only thing about plugging up the hole to the, the CW Saturn's dimension or hell or whatever it is.
Luthor doesn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it's almost like Luthor also is a Kristen Wells character in that he's just a plot device and really does nothing else. There is a nice moment where, I can't remember if it's Clark thinking back or Lex thinking back to when the two of them were at college and Lex was under the disguises of a professor. And there's this moment where you're like, Superboy is about to tell Lex Luthor his big secret and the Smallville television series will never be the same again. That is kind of nice, but it also feels like Lex Luthor doesn't belong in this story.
I kind of like the place of Luthor, because there's an extended flashback where Luthor is talking about being in high school and how his family moved
from the city
to Smallville.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's talking about how he would constantly outsmart people, but he would see that little smirk on Clark Kent's face. And he decided, because of that little smirk, that Clark Kent was somebody that he liked. And that's how they got to be friends. And I'm like, that may be the first time I've ever heard that Clark and Lex were friends in high school and believed it. But I feel like Superman having like weirdos in his orbit really works for me in this story. Superman having Luthor trying to kill him, Jimmy kind of getting in trouble, you know, Lena having psychic flashes and Lois being all, "Hi, I'm Margot Kidder."
Yeah.
You know, you have all of these things going around, and you have your moments where, oh my gosh, hi, I'm Steve Lombard. I will be gone by 1984 and no one will miss me at all.
I mean, but again,
I'm important to the mythos.
Right. Because if you are reading comics at this time.
Yep.
I mean, they're going so far as this is the WGBS era of Superman, where he is the reporter.
Clark is the Walter anchor Cronkite, of the WGBS Evening News.
Yeah. I mean, that is a important plot point in here. And everybody from, you know, they even have, what's his name? One of the Darkseid's minions on Earth is still in charge and everything. Morgan Edge is very much a, it's very much paying attention to continuity, which I really, really appreciate. All of that stuff. But then there's bits of it where it's like, okay, this doesn't fit right to me as the reader. And then ultimately this is Jesus and the devil having a conversation story. That's what it boils down to. Right. So the devil is tempting Jesus on the mountain or on the desert or wherever he's at some point. So you mention Elijah and it's just like, no, this is very much a biblical story in Superman is the Christ figure who has to sacrifice himself, being tempted by the devil for all of these things. And so that also kind of took me out of it when you kind of frame it in that perspective, which I'm not sure that it was intended to be that way, but the framing of it certainly feels like that. Does that make sense? Did you get that as well or no?
No, but I almost never see Christ figures. I can definitely see, you know, the aspect of a superhuman, and I can definitely see the protective, you know, bits and pieces. But for me, that's almost a plus, because I really love a traditional 1963 Superman story where you have to challenge him in interesting ways. But this story only really challenges him intellectually. And, you know, at one point, Saturn is like, well, I'm just going to ruin everything. I'm going to reveal your secret identity of the world.
Yeah, and Superman just shrugs it off. He's like, well, I'm kind of disappointed. I like Clark a lot.
Right.
But, you know, I'm still not going to kill this person.
That's not going to destroy Superman in 1960, whatever. And that's really, that I think is the core of it, is Magin's Superman here is the Superman that I really love from the Silver Age.
Yeah, no,
Superman,
this one
that I remember from it being a kid. And I'm just like, this is definitely, oh my God, such a period piece.
Yeah. No, it is. That's why I said, I can really see if this were to be adapted, if DC had said, oh yeah, this was a fairly successful novel, can we adapt this? This would be one of those moments where it's like, what's Kurt Swan doing? Because I think Kurt Swan would be brilliant to do the illustrations of this book in comic book form.
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
No, I think that's who you have
no
to go
longer
with
us.
No, yeah, and by that time.
I'm trying to think right now in 2023 who could pull this off, and I'm just like,
today. So Doc Shaner, I think, would do a good job.
Doc Shaner,
I think Dan Mora would do a very good job. I think who illustrates Kurt Busiek's stuff?
Astro City Brent stuff. Anderson.
Yeah.
Brent Anderson, I think, could do it. I also feel like what is that cat's name? Oh, it'll come to me in a second.
Well, I mean, you could also, you know, if you look at Grant Morrison, Superman. What the crap is that story where he's dying because he went into the sun?
All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
Frank Quitely
could also do that. Yeah.
I would definitely.
I think if I could. So when did Kurt Swan die?
1995 or 96.
Oh, so he was still around when this book was out. You could definitely have had Kurt Swan illustrate this as a comic book in that time period.
Yeah. And I can't remember who drew the Miracle Monday story in issue 400, but I think it was Jim Steranko.
I can see him doing that.
And I love that, because Steranko has not done much for DC at all.
Let's see. Pencilers. It says Joe Orlando. If this is the 84 version. Writer Elliot S. Magin, Joe Orlando on art, and inks.
Nice. Orlando's another one. Good. He's no longer seen there.
Yeah. 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 I'm trying to think if I have this. Alive? Yes, he is. That's why I said he's the one. If you listen to his podcast, he narrates, both this book and the Last Son of Krypton, the book that comes after this.
Yes. Last Son of Krypton is the next one.
So he does both of
them. Last Son of Krypton is the one before this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then Miracle Monday, and I thought there was a third one, but I may be crazy.
Well, they did not he does not adapt that one.
Okay.
Yeah, Last Son of Krypton came first, you're right. 78.
Yeah, Last Son of Krypton came out around the time
of the movie.
Of the first movie, and this one came out with Superman 2.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So bottom line for me is, if you want to read a time capsule of the past or listen to it, because as much as Magin pokes fun at himself about how bad his New York accent sounds, I thought it was fun listening to him read the book. And if you're someone who listens on a faster speed, like I do, you can get done in this book in like 3 hours. It's a nice afternoon walk.
It's a nice. Yep.
Yeah. So I would go check that out. You can also get it on Kindle. It's available in bookstores and other places, so you can go get it there. Otherwise, as much as I love to wish everyone a good Miracle Monday every third Monday in May, I think this is a story you can kind of pass. It's very good to know about this book. It's definitely something you can check out from the library or listen to it for free on Elliot's podcast. And I'd like to get him money for listening to it for free, but he released it for free. But I don't think that this is a must. This is not a something that's a must that you have to have in your nerd collection. It's very interesting. It is fun at times. It does give you a look at the character in this time period, but I do not think that this is must read material.
You're wrong. But
no,
you're wrong.
I'm right.
Completely in this way. I think, so here's the thing. Elliot S.
Yes. Mac, with the exclamation point.
Exclamation yep. point is one of the writers who really formed the modern Superman take. And I feel like even though, you know, the 86 reboot tried to make changes, mm-hmm. it's still built on a lot of the framework that Elliot put together, that Marty Pascoe put together, you know, that even, you know, oh, what's
Byrne.
His name? Mr. Siegel put together.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, Byrne built on all of that. And then they revamped that New Earth Superman a couple of times to bring it back. And by about 2004, 2005, you really did have an Elliot S. Magan Superman running around in these mm-hmm. books by mm-hmm. four or five different creators. And
yeah.
I feel like if you're looking at the character, if you're really trying to assess 80 years of Superman, you can't do it by looking at, you know, Action Comics 1000, because Action Comics 1000 was all about the last 5 years of Superman, which I think was a selfish decision. But more importantly, it was a decision that really kind of offsets this take on Superman, which is that Superman is good for the sake of being good. And when you get to the end of this story, Superman defeats the devil through A, purity of heart, B, cleverness, and C, the manipulations and machinations of his greatest enemy, who used to be his high school best friend. And I feel like those three things, if you put those together, those are the answer to the question that people keep asking. How do you make Superman interesting?
Yeah, no, this is interesting. I'm not disagreeing with you.
This is a way you could make Superman interesting. So I was kidding when I said you were wrong. You were wrong that you didn't say Elliot S. Magan. I disagree is what I meant to say. And I feel like Miracle Monday is one of those things that if you really want to say, you know, I'm a comic nerd, that's fine. I read comics, yeah. But if you want to say to yourself, am I a fan? Am I a fan man or woman? Am I a fan person? If you want to say you're a fan person, if you want to say, you know, I'm, you know, smarter than your average bear per se. First of all, don't misuse per se. Second of all, I think you should read Miracle Monday, if for no other reason than to give you kind of a sketch of what Superman was in 1980. And then I feel like maybe you should, you know, watch a little bit of the 1953 television show to see what Superman was in 1953. And then I think you should go back and watch the Fleischer Brothers cartoons and see what Superman was in 1942 and kind of piece these all together in your head and say to yourself, wow, I should call one of my pals from college and I should start a website and I should just like nerd out one night a week, like for 3 hours on a show, and we can like bring on guests and we can talk about stuff and then we can review comics and movies mm-hmm. and you too can be Steven.
Yeah. You can be cool like me. Here's what I've done in the show notes. I have put a link to the Amazon website, where you can buy this book, Kindle or paperback form. A little bit comes back our way. And I don't know what the current status of, any residuals. My guess is that there are none for Magan. But maybe a little bit goes back his way as well. I've also put a link in the show notes to Elliot Makes Stuff Up, which you can link to the podcast so that you can go and listen to the audiobook if you like as well. And I'm sure he would appreciate any kind of downloads and hits that he gets off of that. So there you go. on that. Bottom line for me is fine. I think Matthew liked it a little bit more, and that's okay too. And I think that's where we're going to wrap it up this issue, Matthew. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you found some value in this show and you would love to hear us talk about the Fablemans in depth, then Patreon is where you need to go. Patreon.com/Major Spoilers. We talk about that this week in the Major Spoilers pre-show. And next week, I think Rodrigo will be back. His parents are in town this week for whatever reason. Next week, though, we're going to be taking a look at Demon Days because Jarmo demanded it. And because we know that you love comics and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Wait, think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. It's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, be in the Middle East with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.